ברשות ראש הישיבה, רבי אמיר, רבנים, אלכס ודברה, אבי וצפורה ופמילי, פרנדס ותלמידי הישיבה. It's difficult to believe that 30 years have passed since Mati Zichron al-Bracha has left us. As we already mentioned to the Talmidim of the Yeshiva, the Talmidim of the Mati Weinstein Overseas Program, following Mati's year in Shalavim, Mati returned to America to attend Harvard University, and while walking with his family on a peaceful Shabbos afternoon, his first Shabbos home from school, Mati was hit by a neighbor riding a bike. A short while after the accident, Mati, Zichrono Livracha, left this world. Let me clarify. Unfortunately, I had never had the privilege of meeting Mati. I myself learned in Shalavim 6 years before Mati learned here in the yeshiva. At the time, the year after Mati learned in yeshiva, I was married in Smicha at YU. The next year after that, my wife and I made Aliyah, came to Shalavim. And I met the Hornstein family through Avi, through Mati's brother, a very special gem of a person who learned here in Shalavim a year after my wife and I went to the Kollel in Shalavim in 1991. And I continued learning about Mati, Zichrono Livracha, since then through Mati's incredible family, through Avi, through Alex, and through Vera, Aleha Shalom. On Erev Yom Kippur, over the past 29 years, I've heard descriptions of Mati which continue to deepen my understanding of the huge loss to Am Yisrael when Mati was taken from us on Erev Yom Kippur 30 years ago. Mati was an extremely bright, energetic, idealistic young man who came to Shalavim as an idealistic young man with a thirst to learn. And he left Shalavim with a passion and a vision wanting to make an impact on the Jewish people and on the world. To give you a little bit of a taste of that, I've read some of this in the past. We'll just read from a chapter on Mati in a book that I received as a gift from the Hornsteins, Uncommon Wisdom. Just a couple of lines I want to share with you for the boys. It's the first time hearing from this chapter. An example, a taste of who Mati was. In this chapter, again, Uncommon Wisdom, True Tales of What Our Lives as Doctors Have Taught Us About Love, Faith, and Healing, in the chapter Walking the Edge, about Mati and his tragic accident and the pain of his loss. After the accident, Vera, Allah Shalom, Mati's mother, Vera spoke of Mati Aban. She recalled her son's attendance at Yeshiva University's high school, the Talmudic Academy in Manhattan, where he had graduated first in his class with perfect SAT scores. But Mati had other plans, she said. Harvard allowed him to delay admission for a year so he could study in Israel at a school called Yeshivat Shalavim, internationally known for its Torah and Talmud studies. Raised in an observant family, Mati had been deeply drawn to Judaic studies and to Israel since childhood. Going to Israel was his dream, and we supported him completely, Beres said softly. It had been a joyful year for Mati. He'd made good friends, explored the hills and valleys of central Israel, and deepened his commitment to the study and understanding of Judaism. Just last month, he had started Harvard. But he's not exactly your typical freshman, said Vera with a small smile. A math major, he had done exceptionally well on pre-admission testing and was excused from all the required math courses. He immediately began taking electives. In addition to his regular studies, Mati had begun to teach Hebrew classes part-time at the Maimonides School for the Children of Harvard faculty. He also studied Torah and Talmud after class with students his own age, as well as with elders who had much to teach him. He became a political activist on campus and an ardent supporter of Israel. I'll skip a couple of pages towards the end of the chapter, after Mati's tira. Alex, meanwhile, had tried to cope with Mati's death by burying himself in his work as the owner of a real estate development company. But he too found his concentration severely impaired. Even worse, he began to realize that he didn't care about his work. What difference did it make if he won the next bid for community or office complex? He began to take long walks by himself up into the hills surrounding Allentown, where he and Mati had often hiked. One morning, as he climbed to the top of one of these hills and looked up at the twists of clouds dancing through the sky, a question came to him unbidden. What would Mati have me do? And a voice within him softly answered, Israel. He knew then that his son would want him to support the yeshiva in Israel, where Mati had spent the year prior to starting Harvard, and where his passions were further ignited. There, students from around the world had the opportunity to learn the Torah, the Talmud, the prophets, the sayings of the fathers, and other sacred texts. Alex and Vera had traveled to Yeshivat Shalavim for a memorial service held 30 days after Mati's death, and had learned there that the yeshiva had been a deeply nurturing environment for their son. Both Alex and Vera were moved by the students' and teachers' sorrow at the loss of Mati. They were also struck by the students' dedication and passion for learning. It was so much like Mati's. And now, as Alex stood on the hill and gazed at the eddying clouds, he thought that Mati would want more young men to have the opportunity to experience the joy in learning that he did. Alex and Vera made a major endowment to the school and began to serve on its board, and Alex eventually became its president. The school was renamed the Mati Hornstein Institute of Yeshivat Shalavim. Additionally, Alex made sure that scholarships were available to students who otherwise could not afford to pay tuition and living expenses. Since then, the Hornsteins, Alex, navigated, brought to fruition the project of the dorm that all of you guys live in, and turned that dream into a reality, and continued to be part of Yeshivat Shalavim. And while Mati is no longer with us physically, his presence is still felt, and he and his family continue to make a huge impact on Yeshivat Shalavim, a place that Mati loved so much. Yehi zichro baruch, and Bezat Hashem, Hashem should give you strength, Alex and Deborah, and the Avi Tzipor, the entire family, should give you strength, and you should, and should give you nechama in knowing that Mati's presence has continued to be felt here in the yeshiva, and the Hornsteins are part and parcel of the Shalavim Mishpacha. And thank you very much for everything that you have done and are doing for each Yeshivat Shalavim. It's my great privilege to ask the Rosh Yeshiva to share words with us.
Not easy to speak after 30 years and really to try to focus on the question, what is the we that Moti left to us? I feel that every yahrzeit, the main thing that has to be discussed is what is the we, what should we learn from Moti? Moti life, Moti personality, his family. What should we should learn to take it to ourselves? This is the Ilui Neshama. This is making the place of the Niftar Ba'olam Haba in higher degree. And I think that having this Yahrzeit a day before Yom Kippur is connected to the personality of Moti. The main thing of Yom Kippur, and I'm going to speak about it very briefly, I'll speak about it more tomorrow night after the Kol Nidre, is really to understand who we are. To take Yetzer Hara, to take the Chataim away. Therefore, there are two Seirim. To really understand where are we going, what is our direction. And with that, to come and tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we are asking for Kapara and Tahara. What I think was so special about Moti, and I remember him when I was a student here in Yeshiva. He knew who he is. He knew his direction. He knew where he wants to go to. Very brilliant. It was clear to him that he wanted to make Aliyah and he wanted to go even to his Israeli politics and influence. But it was clear to him that he had to take responsibility. That he's not living his own life. He got it from home. The responsibility to Klal Yisrael. This is what led him. He knew the forces that he has, and he wanted to find a way how to take it to helping Klal Yisrael. And I think this is the will that we have all to learn from Moti and to take it to ourselves. We are not living for ourselves. We are ambassador of Hashem, and we want to give to Klal Yisrael. I saw it in Moti when he was here. And I saw it later on in meetings that I had with Alex and Vera Alea Shalom. I remember a meeting that I sat in New York, and they were planning the dorm, the all are sleeping there. And for me, it was like a dream. Who thought that it one day will be? And they discussed exactly what would be the size of the room and the color, the path to go there. And it was like they discussed they are building their own house. And to me, this is one of the biggest lessons that I learned of what does it mean to give to Klal Yisrael. I was sitting there and I was amazed. Amazed to see how much they cared about every detail. I told Alex now, outside before we start, that I learned two things. A, if you want something, even if it is a dream, it will come to be reality if you really want it. And B, what does it mean to take care of Klal Yisrael? It's like you're taking care of yourself. But yourself come to be Klal Yisrael exactly like it's written in Rav Shimon Shkab, that who you are is Klal Yisrael. This is what Moti was. And this what so much I learned, not only from Moti, but Ibadu Lechaim Arukim from Alex, Nalea Shalom from Vera. And this, I think, has to be the message. That the word I doesn't mean only myself, but really mean giving who I am to clarify. As Rav Axman said, I really want to thank the whole Orange State family for helping Yeshiva so much. This other program is being called in the name of Moki, being put for the Yeshiva. The room that you are there, everything started by Alex and Vera, and all the help for all the years, and all the lessons that they are teaching us about giving to Klal Yisrael. The Simchat Beit HaShoeva is going to be in the roof of the Holstein family in David Village. And a lot of other things that Alex is connected and his family. This is the message that we have to learn. And if all of us will learn it, this really will be the biggest Ilui Neshama. And I'm honored to invite Rav Danny Goldstein, that learned with Moti in the same class here in Yeshiva, that is the Rabbi of the Midrashah of Midrashat Amit, to speak about Moti and to give us a shir lechavodah.
Just the Rosh Yeshiva of Yamer, just the Waxman, the Ornstein family, the Ornstein entire family. It is very meaningful to join together back with the Shalavim family in all of its branches on this night. The Bachrim, you the Bachrim who are all here, Al Takaras Hatov, to the family, the Hornstein family, to Mati, who bears the name of the program that you're all learning and growing in Torah, and to the friends and family who are here to remember and to celebrate and to be Makdish, the Divrei Torah, in memory of Mati on his 30th yard site. And I feel I speak on behalf of the Chaverim who are here from the class of Tavshin Mem Tes, Rav Ezra, chief amongst us, and all of the Chaverim who are here to gather and to remember. I want to speak about a topic that is found in the Gemara Megillah. It's a fairly well-known Gemara. I'm not going to go through all of the Makoros that you have, but just for reference. But the Gemara says that the Tanya Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Ezra Tikin on Yisrael, Shu Korin Klola Shabbat Torah, Kohanim Kodim Atzeres, Mishnah Torah Kodim Rosh Hashanah. So we have this well-known halacha. We just kept it to a certain degree a few weeks ago, that Ezra made a takana that before Shavuos and before Rosh Hashanah respectively, the clothes from the Torah, which are found in Vayikra and Devarim respectively, should be read. Now, I'm very well aware that the official reason for this takana is found in the next words in the Gemara, and that's the famous phrase, Kedesh Tifla Shana Kilosa, that there's an idea that we should take all the klolos that would possibly exist in the year and sort of concentrate them a little bit towards the end of the year, and then we'll start the new year afresh. That's what, if you ask anyone on the street, you'll learn the Sach Megillah, why Ezra was misaking the Sakana. So that's the answer they'll give you, as it says Beferish in the Gemara. But I'm going to be a little, with a little chutzpah, and try to give an approach that the truth is I couldn't help myself but thinking of. Mati, as maybe you heard over the time here, is a little bit of an iconoclast, like to think outside the box. So channeling that, there was an idea that I couldn't help myself but thinking. And that has to do with maybe there's a different shot in this Gemara. Maybe there's a different reason why Ezra was misaking that the clothes should be red at this two times during the year. And the truth is, just like in any sugya that you learn, if you want to understand it correctly, so you just have to unlock all of its component parts and value, see what's going on here, what makes the whole. And so if you look at this Gemara, it's basically you have three parts to it. In this one little sentence, you have Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos. That's number one. Number two, you have Klolos. And you have Ezra. You put those three together, you get our Gemara. And the question is, what, if anything, do they have to do with one another? And that's what I'd like to explore with you in the time that we have together tonight. So the first question is, before we put all the parts together, the question is, what does Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos, what do they have to do with each other? It's an odd pairing. They don't usually go together. I have a theory. I call it the WhatsApp theory of holidays. Let me explain. I imagine here everybody has WhatsApp. Yes, you have a WhatsApp group, maybe even Shalvin. So everybody's a personality. Everybody is a phone. Everyone has their own personality. If you want to understand someone's personality, you want to understand who they really are. So you take their phone and you see what groups they belong to. Who are they linked up? You want to understand someone. So you say, you take a look at someone's phone. They're in one group. Of course, the family group. And then you have, let's say, Shalavim alumni group. Okay, that's an insight into their personality. Maybe they're in a Harvard student group. That's another insight into personality. Maybe they're in the George Thorogood and the Delaware Destroyer fan club, much to their father's chagrin, but that's also a group. Maybe they're in the Monty Python players group. Whatever it is, you look at all their groups, you understand what they are. You want to understand the complexity. Everybody's complex. Everyone's made of different parts. See their groups, you'll understand. I think the same thing applies to holidays. Everything applies to the Chagim. It applies to every halacha. The truth is, but if you want to understand what a Chag is, you have to see what groups are it in. What group is it in? Because a holiday is a holiday, but it belongs to groups. I'll give you a very simple example. Sukkot is coming up. Sukkot is part of a WhatsApp group called the Shalosh Regalim. So Pesach is in its group, Shavuos is in its group. But it's also in another group. It's with the Chagei Tishrei. So it has another group. Tzom Gedalia. It's in a lot of groups. It's in the Four Fasts group for the Churban. But it's also in the Aseret Yemei Tshuva group. You want to understand Tzom Gedalia, you have to understand its groups. No? Chanukah is in a group with Purim, and it's also in a different group with Asar B'Teves. So it goes on and on. Every holiday is in multiple groups. You want to understand the holiday? Understand all of its groups. So now we have Shavuos, and it finds itself in a group with Rosh Hashanah. And the question is, why do these two go together? What's their group? What does Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah have to do with each other? That Ezra was misaking, that you read the klolos daf in front of these two holidays. Obviously, there's a commonality between the two. And the question is, what is it? And I'd like to suggest the following answer. Approach, I should say more correctly. If you look at on line 20, 21, 22, you have a very famous Gemara. Everybody knows this Gemara. That Gemara says, "My d'chtiva here by Boker Yom Hashishi Hey Yisrael Lamali Malamet Chesna Kadosh Baruch Hu in Ma'aseh Bereishis V'Amar Lahem Im Yisrael Makavlan Torah Tamis Kaimim V'Im Lav Ani Machzir Eschem L'Tov Vavok." So we see from this Gemara that the world was waiting. It wasn't complete. The world was created. It existed for 26 generations. It wasn't complete until Mamad Har Sinai. Mamad Har Sinai was the event that completed, that brought to Tachlis my separation, as the Gemara says. The Gemara also says it elsewhere. Similar idea in the next Gemara. That Il Malay Torah, Lonis Kaim Shamayim Varetz, that the very world, the existence of the world, The world as created is not sufficient. The world as created could not stand alone, if not for Torah. And that's what the Gemara says, Shenemar, Yom Lobrisi, Yom Avalayla, Chukos Shamayim Ve'aretz Lo Samti. So we see that Mamad Har Sinai was not just an event where we receive the Torah. And if you ask your average kid, what is Shavuos represent? It's a Kabbalah, it's a Torah, Nasa Venishma, the mitzvot. We say all night, we learn Torah. But Mamad Har Sinai in itself was something much bigger than that. It was something massive. It was something that encompassed the whole entire world. The world could not exist without the Torah. The world could not exist without Hashem's essence in the world through Torah. So the very tachlis of the Bria, the very tachlis of the creation, came to be on Shavuos. But the entirety, the event, the klalius of that event, which was so huge, which is so all-encompassing, could not be held in one holiday. And so if you think about it, two holidays, there are two holidays that we celebrate in our year, which encompass that which happened at Mamad Har Sinai. The Mamad of Matan Torah is refracted into two events. On the one hand, we celebrate Shavuos, like we said, Nasa V'Nishma, the giving of the Torah, the receiving of the mitzvot. That's one clear motif of Shavuos. On the other hand, we celebrate the Hofa'ah, the appearance of Hashem in the world. Hashem's coming to the world and being a part of it as the Melech. That is celebrated on Rosh Hashanah. Yet, it comes from Mamad Har Sinai. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, as we know, there was no one here to see it, there was no one here to experience it, there was no one here to say, oh, Hashem is in our midst. When did that change in the world? It changed in Mamad Har Sinai. And that came out of Mefurash in the Shofros that we just said just a few days ago. The bracha is all about the Hisgalos of Hashem and Har Sinai. So Har Sinai is the event. Har Sinai is a total event. It's an event that encompasses everything, the existence of the world. But we, in our earthly state, we can't handle that in one holiday. And so it gets broken up into two holidays. Rosh Hashanah, which encompasses the glory of Hashem, which is present in the world, which happened at Mamad Har Sinai, and Shavuos, which is the Torah, the mitzvot, the limud Torah, the nasa v'nishma. That aspect of Har Sinai is celebrated on Shavuos. So we understand that WhatsApp group. We understand that connection. What does Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos have to do with each other? The answer is that they are two reflections of the same event. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared and completed the world and gave the world Kiyum with his presence in it on Mamad Har Sinai, Rosh Hashanah, and the Torah that he gave us is Shavuos. So that answers our first one. What do Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos have to do with one another? But then, the next question becomes, okay, assume that you're still with me. Assume that you agree. Why did Ezra slap Klalos on them? Why should these two great events be marked with the reading of the Klalos? Now, just as an aside, it happens to be that the way that we have our laning set up, so it works out that it's... that we lit Parshas Baruch Hu calls it right around Shavuos time, and some was right around Shavuos. But even when they didn't, in Eretz Yisrael, when they didn't read the Torah in that way, it seems to be that Ezra was misaking that no matter what you were laning, you lane these, you lane the Klalos before these holidays. So why did Ezra think that Klalos belonged attached to these events? Why is he taking us down? Why the downer? These are unbelievable events. Hashem is in the world. Hashem gave us the Torah. Klalos? Why? And I think that the answer to that, or the approach, is not more complicated than Makoros that we know and we say and we're very familiar with all the time. We all know the Gemara, Megillah, and Brachos that say, Shem Shem Mevarchim Al HaTov, Mevarchim Al Hara, that no matter what happens in the world, good or bad, difficult, moments of elation, moments of tragedy, whatever the moment is, there's always a relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can tell you, thinking about the day 30 years ago, where I was, and I'll tell you that was at that time I was learning in a yeshiva called Chaim Berlin in Brooklyn for a short period of time, and I was very excited to experience davening in Chaim Berlin, and I got the call about the tragedy, and I got on a bus right away, left Brooklyn, and went straight to Allentown. And I was in Allentown on Erev Yom Kippur. It turned out that the Levaya was only going to be on Motzai Yom Kippur. So I went home, and I lived in a little town called Binghamton. Binghamton, New York, is a very, very small town. There was nothing really going on there. And the Minyan is very small. And I get there right before Mincha. And I remember the whole time just being, like all of us were, in a state of shock, unemotive. Unemotive. I didn't cry. I didn't think too much. It was on autopilot. Everyone gathered in Allentown. And then I went back home. I got to shul. And I remember at Mincha, a very big shul with a very small crowd. If you know anything about little towns in upstate New York, that's what they all look like. A little very big shul, very small crowd. 10, 15 people. And you're trying, the davening that you guys are going to have here, it's going to feel like Mamet Har Sinai. But there you had a few people. Who came to Mincha? You know, Kol Nidre, that was the big event. Who came to Mincha before? And I was there in my zombie-like state, not having emoted at all, not knowing what to think, and I remember it so clearly. Right behind me in shul was a little girl, a baby that someone brought to shul in a carriage, in like a little car seat. And she was there, and we were davening, and all of a sudden she started to cry. And when she started to cry, that's what opened the floodgates. And I feel like at that moment, my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was there in the lowest of the low, through a crying baby in a godforsaken shul in the middle of upstate New York. But still, that's where an Oved Hashem has to reach Hashem. Because Avodas Hashem means to be Oved Hashem no matter where you are and no matter what circumstances. Clearly, there were moments of great jubilation in my life up until that point. The davening here on Yom Ha'Noraim, great moments of simcha, of hisorerus. But sometimes you find that you have to meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the lowest of places, in the most tragic of circumstances, in moments of klala, in moments where it's bad and you don't understand how anything good could possibly ever come with this, and 30 years later, you still don't. But you still, as an Oved Hashem, have to reach Hashem through the klalos. And that brings us to our last point. And why Ezra? Why did Ezra do this? So it seems to me like it was a very simple equation. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, see on line 27, Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ra'ui haya Ezra shetinate in Torah al yadol Yisrael, v'malei lo kidmo Moshe. So the Gemara says Ezra was on the level that the Torah could have been given through him, if not for the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu beat him out first. Ezra is on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the Gemara says. How do you know that? So the Gemara gives a Tzair Shabbat. But Moshe Omer, Moshe Allah, El Elohim. But Ezra Omer, who Ezra? Allah, Mibaba, Allah, Allah, Moshe Ezra, Allah, Allah. That's how they're equal. Torah. But I think there's beyond that Gezer Shava. There's a much more simple reason to equate or to think to compare Moshe and Ezra. Because Moshe and Ezra were both the MC, so to speak, for lack of a more articulate word. They were both in charge, they both presided over a ma'amad of Matan Torah. Ezra brought Klal Yisrael together when he came back from Babel. and he found in Eretz Yisrael the most pathetic community, where I made upstate New York, like Volusia. That's what it was. No one knew anything here. They were all intermarried. They didn't keep Shabbos. The Pachusei Am were here. Everybody here was, it was a klala. It was a klala Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu also presided over Ma'amad Torah. But that, there are no words to describe the inspiration. Malachim, they stopped. The whole world stopped and took notice. When Moshe presided over his Ma'amad of Matan Torah, it was the most inspired moment in the entire history of the world. And when Ezra presided over his Ma'amad of Matan Torah, it was the most pathetic in the history of the world. But Ezra said, this is what we do anyway. It doesn't matter, because through us, even in this matzah, even though we are cursed compared to our predecessors who thousands of years ago stood at Har Sinai, despite that, the Torah and Avodas Hashem goes through us. As individuals, we have to be mekabel the Torah. By Ma'amad Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu looked at a cloud, Nasa v'nishma, we want to do everything, we want to keep everything, such as Slavos. When Ezra found his people, they didn't know anything. They were Mechalei Shabbos. They were intermarried. But Ezra said, it doesn't matter who's here. It doesn't matter that it's not the same group who stood and said Nasa v'nishma. You people, you have to be Mechabal the Torah. You have to be Mechabal the Mitzvos. You have to keep Shabbos. You have to send away your non-Jewish wives. It runs through you. It runs through you. And that's what Ezra told them. And, on the other hand, Ezra also had to ensure that there had to be a Kabbalah of the Klal, not just as individual keepers of mitzvos, but the Klal had to accept the Torah in a Ma'amad of Matan Torah, because the history and the destiny of the Jewish people, because Hashem's presence in the world ran through them. It didn't matter who they were. It didn't matter that they were the lowest of the low. Sometimes the destiny of Klal Yisrael runs through the highest of the high, but sometimes it runs through the lowest of the low. And Ezra knew that. And Ezra said, maybe compared to the Ma'amad Har Sinai, the Ma'amad Matan Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, that was so baruch, maybe our Ma'amad, our poor man's Ma'amad Matan Torah, is one of klala, but it's one anyway, and it has to be. And that's where we find Hashem, and that's what we have to carry Hashem's name through under every circumstance. And perhaps that's the pshat in Ezra. If you take, if you detach Abaye, which I'm not allowed, I don't know if you're allowed to do that, but if you detach him from the Gemara and just look at Ezra's statement, maybe that's what Ezra was saying. That Ezra, who, by the way, one with this Ma'amad of Matan Torah, by the way, was on Rosh Hashanah. Of course, that's not a coincidence. On Rosh Hashanah, he gathered to have a Ma'amad of Kabbalah Satorah, a Ma'amad of Matan Torah. And maybe he felt that you should not think, like the Pasuk says, everyone saw the Beis HaMikdash, the people who knew the old Beis HaMikdash, they were crying because the camp couldn't measure. Maybe Ezra felt that. Maybe Ezra felt that these people don't measure up to what once was. This is a Kabbalah Satorah of Klalos. But Ezra said, it doesn't matter. Because it doesn't matter. Because the Torah runs through us, no matter where, no matter how, and no matter what circumstances, from the highest of the high to the lowest of the low. And I think, as we complete the thought, I think that brings us very much to Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur also fits into this as well. Rav Huttner writes in Pachel Yitzchak the following. I'll just read you one simple line. Yom HaKippurim Hu Be'etzem Yom Matan Torah. Because that's when the Luchos Shniyos were given. Ela Shehu Matan Torah Al Derech HaTshuva. Dehainu Sheluchos HaRishonos Hin Matan Torah Al Derech Tzadik Meikaro. Leumazos Luchos Shniyos Hin Matan Torah Al Derech HaTshuva. Those are Rav Huttner's words. Yom Kippur is also a Ma'amad Matan Torah. The day that the Luchos were given to us, and the day of Tshuva, it's not a coincidence that they correspond on the same day. And so I look at Yom Kippur, in light of what we said up until now, in the following way. Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos, as we said, represents the two faces, the refraction of Ma'amad Har Sinai. We look at it in two ways. Yom Kippur, a day of tshuva, Yom Kippur, after the Chet HaEgel, is the day that we, in almost a Herculean effort, try to take those two split themes and put them together as strong as we can, as difficult as it is, into one unified theme again. The split that takes place in the world of Gashmias that we live in is put together with this effort, this Herculean effort, on Yom Kippur. Our day of Matan Torah, Shel Tshuva, the day where we don't partake in Olam Hazeh at all, we try as much as we can to be like Malachim. You know how people say, well, on Yom Kippur, we're Malachim. You've heard people say that, on Yom Kippur, we're Malachim. So the bad news is, on Yom Kippur, we're not Malachim. We're never Malachim. But we try to be. It's like people who say literally, but they don't actually mean literally. They mean it figuratively. It's the same thing. We're not Malachim. But we try so hard. We try so hard to carry on our back, through our actions, the Hofa'ah of Hashem. Somebody who comes and sees on Yom Kippur, a group of Jews davening, and a group of Jews who are shouting Hashem Hu Elokim, or are shouting the Yud Gimel Midos, from the fast, from the Inui. So that is a Hofa'ah of Hashem. We're bringing it back on the day of Matan Torah. And if I may go way, way outside the box, I think that there's also a Nasa B'Nishma of Luchos Shnios, of Yom Kippur, of Matan Torah Shel Tshuva. And I think that's the Al-Chait. Because if you think about Nasa B'Nishma, what we can do, a statement that all the mitzvahs that are coming our way, we're going to do them. Nasa B'Nishma. So what's Al-Chait, if not a Nasa B'Nishma, a poor man's Nasa B'Nishma? Nasa B'Nishma Shel HaKlolos. That we didn't do it, but we're going to. Because we know that the inverse of every one of these things is a mitzvah. And the inverse of every one of these things is something that we should do, and we're going to do it. Even though we've fallen. That's, I think, the flip side. That's what Rav Huttner may have had in mind when he called Yom Kippur the Yom Kippurim, u'be'etzem Yom Matan Torah, but Yom Matan Torah al derech hatshuva. I'd just like to close with a few recollections about our friend Mati. When I think about these two characteristics, these two types of experiences, one of Kabbalah Smitzvos, one of the Torah, Kabbalah Smitzvos, being a from person, and one where you encompass the spirit of Hashem, the Hofa'ah of Hashem in the world. So I'd say that although Mati was a very complete and unique package of a person, or very complex, but when you just were around him, you did get the sense that there's a spirit of something greater here, a phenomenon, something that was in the wind, that was just, you wanted to be part of. It was said, and it's true, he was very, very bright. Very, very bright. He was great at math. He had pi on his keeper. 3.14 up to whatever digit. He was extremely, extremely creative. He was very, very creative. And he was very witty. And those often go together in a very smart person. And he was. He was very funny, and he was fun to be around. I was thinking, he took upon himself when he was here to learn the entire Tanakh straight through without mefarshim, but to go through because he felt that that's just something that, of course, you have to know. I'm not sure how common that was. I don't know how common it is now. It didn't strike me as something that people would do. But I can see him hanging in the Beis Medrash, which is now the high school Beis Medrash, on those on that bima in the middle with the, if I have it correct, there are these pillars with lights on them. Was sort of swinging around late at night when there are very few people there. But he was a phenomenon. He was creative. And as Rav Yamer mentioned also, he was directed. And I'm going to show you something that I have in my wallet. I showed this once to Mr. Hornstein. This is a, I keep this in my wallet between the pictures of my wife and my children. But this is a little card. It has, I don't know if you can see it in the back. It says, it's 31 years old. It has the letters Mem Tzadi Chaf Sofit Metzach. And this is the part, this is the political party that Mati was going to found when he came back after Harvard to Eretz Israel. He was he had leanings towards capitalism, and he was and this is what he was going to do. He was going to fix all of Israel's problems. And guys, remember the year that we were here was an election year, and politics was in the air. The same as now. But he saw the problems, and he was going to fix it. And he didn't just say he was going to fix it. He named his party, and he didn't just name his political party. He made a card, and he gave it to me, and I have it. And this is something I carry around with me every day. Because it just is striking, the determination that a person can have if he is swept up with the Ruach Hashem. If he understands that a boy from Allentown, not a boy from Volusia, but a boy from Allentown can still be the spirit, the place where Hashem rests to move his message forward, he understood that about himself. Because it's true. Because it's true of everybody. Because that's the way it is, and that's where Hashem is. He understood that, and he was so determined to move it forward. I will say on a sad, sadder note, as the years go by and our memories become sort of encased in dust and cobwebs, and the actual striking images that many of the Chavir had have faith, but there's another counterbalance to the sadness, and that is we're all not quite 50. I'm sorry, that's frivolous information, but we're getting there. Presidents are 50. Prime ministers are 50. People in the government are 50. Leaders of economics are 50. And sometimes we focus on the memories, the sadness of losing a 19-year-old boy. But sometimes I think of what was lost. What would be? Where would he be? And he would be at a podium somewhere, and he would be channeling that that spirit. I'll say just to close, literally, the last paragraph, that I believe that is your charge. You are here. The bachur here in this room are here learning in yeshiva that bears his name. And that requires that you follow to a bit in his footsteps. And that is to realize that no matter who you are or where you come from, or if you're the best guy in the shir, or you're not the best guy in the shir, it doesn't matter, because the spirit of Hashem rests in you. The spirit of Hashem in the world rests in Klal Yisrael, and you are Klal Yisrael. And you have to take that very, very, very seriously. And so it's my bracha to you, and my bracha to all of us, as we start this year, Tavshin Pei, to commemorate 30 years, that we're all mechazik ourselves, to continue to reflect the light. Mr. Hornstein mentioned to me right before I got up to speak that Matis Petir was on Erev Yom Kippur, and he was born on Erev Shavuos. And so to take these lights of Mamet Har Sinai, the way that we're fragmented in any which way that you can grab it, whether it's Limud Torah, Kiyum Mitzvos, in the best possible way, or to capture the spirit of Hashem and to move it forward to the world, but that is all. That is our obligation. Yemetz Hashem, this should be a year where we are able to fulfill that task in a favorable way. Gemar Chasima Tova.
Thank you. he was proud to call himself. He was Mordechai. He was always very proud to say he was Mordechai. Ish Ben Yamin.
So you were saying about a political that was.
It was. I do want to repeat what you just said. Rav Goldstein did not know that Muti was born on Erev Shavuos, but yet his topic was Har Sinai and Matan Torah. So, what other thing? And Muti was multifaceted, but I'll get to the point. My point to you, my charge to you, as Rav Goldstein gave you a charge. Multifaceted. When he was 6 years old, for nursery and kindergarten, we sent him to a yeshiva, Megan David, in Flatbush. I don't know if any of you know the area. The reason for that was because the director the chief of the administration of the school was a close friend of ours. And as it turns out, he was right. He insisted that that yeshiva had the absolute best kindergarten and pre-K or whatever you call it, 2 years before first grade. And he had met Moti when Moti was a baby, because we lived in the same shtiebel in Bora Park. So, and he insisted that this 40-year-old person, he has to be in his school because it would bring fame to his school at the age of four. And so we sent him there, and it turned out it was. But given the hashkafa of that yeshiva, we didn't want him going there in first grade, and we pulled him out to go to Flatbush. The Rosh Yeshiva of Megan David called us in, both my wife and I called us in, and harangued us. Harangued and beat his fist on the table that we cannot send him to Flatbush because he's going to be a gadol b'dor, which is an analysis made when he was 6 years old. Anyway, we sent him to Flatbush and whatever, and he made his presence felt there as well. Another aspect of it is, in the summers we used to go up to the Catskills, that's all Brooklynites do. And one Sunday, his cousin who was in camp, Monk, came to us for a barbecue, and in the evening we took him, drove him back to the camp, and on the way, going back to our bungalow from dropping him off, very, very heavy fog descended. It was just, the sun hadn't set, it was evening, but very, very heavy fog. And literally, I could not see more than 20 or 30 yards out the windshield on Highway Route 17. And I'm driving very carefully. Yes, I can drive carefully. And Moti's sitting next to me, and he's shivering, quaking in fear. I said, Moti, it's okay, I'm driving carefully, we'll be fine. And he looked at me, beat. He looked at me and said, it's all right, Dad. As we say, Ad Hashem li v'lo ira. He was 7 years old. When he was 14, he spent, well, actually 14 and 15, he spent the summer with the John Hopkins University summer program for whatever. And he, Goldstein mentioned his humorous side. And he was very proud that they had a talent show. And he said, and I entered the talent show as a sit-down comic. That in itself is interesting. But Goldstein mentioned whatever his charge was, it runs through you. So I want to take another aspect of the charge that runs through you. You are privileged to spend this year here. What do you give back to the world for having this opportunity to immerse yourself here for a year? So what I say to you is that 25 years from now, Mesh Hashem, 25 years from now, you will be in your the center of your life. You will be successful. You will be doing great things. You need to remember the yeshiva. You need to remember the yeshiva because it is through though that giving back, that paying back, that is makes the future possible. So I want to thank you for listening here patiently this evening. And I want you to remember 25 years from now when the fundraising call is going to come from the future director of development that you have a responsibility to respond because it will be through that response that the next generation, that generation will have the opportunity to spend a year here and take away a hashkafa for life as you did and as Moti did. Thank you. Should all be Marta Tima Tova and have an excellent year.
We'll end with Kel Mali Rachman.
Five guys can remain behind.